But I just said, hey, let's pick up the pace a little bit, buddy.
Welcome to the APC Podcast. Alex Patakis, Ben Foley, and Zach Rapport here with you, getting set to talk to Justice Mosqueda of Setting the Edge. Setting Edge on Twitter, Jumosk, J-U-M-O-S-Q on Twitter's his handle. He does the podcast with Charles McDonald, and he's just a Packers savant slash football savant. So we're going to talk to him about a number of things coming up in a little bit. Packers lose to the Falcons. It kind of sucks. A lot of Twitter interaction. We've got your questions loaded up for Justice at the APC Pod on Twitter. And the APC Podcast at gmail.com is where you get the show. You can get to us at Alex Patakis.
At Ben Foldy.
A-K-A-S. Ben Foldy is much more...
B-E-N-F-O-L-D-Y.
It's much more simple to spell. And Zach Rapport.
Do I have to spell it?
If you want.
At Zach Rapport.
I give you the option.
He doesn't want.
It's
That's that shit he don't like.
Yeah.
No?
Millennial laziness.
Yeah, true. Why even think? We don't really need to. We could just have Justice talk about the game.
It's true.
On our podcast. But anyway, should we just get right to it?
I think so.
Let's do it.
Let's just break down the game.
Justice.
With Justice Mosqueda.
The number you dialed is...
Acme Packing Company.
All right, time to recap the Packers Week 2 loss with Justice Mosqueda. He's the host of the Setting the Edge podcast. You can check him out on Twitter at J-U-M-O-S-Q. He's kind enough to give us some time here, second appearance on the show. What's going on, Justice? Appreciate you hopping on with us once again.
Yeah, not much. I'm recording from my bedroom, and it sounds like you guys have studio time, so we're living very different lives right now.
We are in an unofficial studio.
Unofficial studio that we've rented. It's an hourly rate in New York City.
Normally, it's my kitchen, so don't feel too bad.
Yeah. No pet in here this time with us. So, but yeah, so anyway, I guess we'll start. You know, I listened to your guys' show. Obviously, you do the show with Charles McDonald, who's a Falcons fan, so you know, he got the best of us once again. But I kind of want to start with the Packers defense. You know, it's the third game in a calendar year, like you mentioned on your show, and this I feel like this has happened with the Seahawks too. There's three losses in a calendar year, if I'm not mistaken. 111 points, over 1,200 yards, no takeaways. So what do you make of it? Like, they look great in week one, but Seattle's offensive line is trash. Do you feel like this defense can be fixed? And what are your big takeaways on the defensive side of the ball for Green Bay?
Yeah, so one thing that we can do is what I do for Setting the Edge is we have this new thing called the update, which basically takes like it takes efficiency statistics and it turns them into like tangible numbers. So like you could say, okay, the Green Bay Packers have had, you know, 1.6 more sacks than expected this year based on league average and things like that. If you look at the Packers defense right now, they're below average at everything other than completion percentage, sack percentage, and tackle for loss percentage, which they're all in the top quarter of the league. So you could say, you know, this team is the opposite of a bend don't break team. Like, this is nothing new. Dom Capers is still the defensive coordinator here. They're either going to get sacks and tackles for losses to get you off the field, or they're just going to let, you know, if you want to be a consistent offense, you can just take them end to end, basically. They're not really getting interceptions this year, which is the issue. And on the offensive side, that's more of the concern to me, because I thought they weren't able to move the ball efficiency at the beginning.
So your take is bad, bad, not good, it sounds like.
I think the Mike Daniels thing hurt, obviously. I think if Mike Daniels is in there, maybe it's a bit of a different game, because the thing about the Falcons is their run game has been solid for the past 2 years, but the issue has been they allow a lot of tackles for losses, and I thought Mike Daniels was just going to be a monster.
Yeah.
Because I think, what was it, Mike Daniels had four tackles at the line of scrimmage or behind, including sacks in week one, which was second in the league, only behind Calais Campbell, who like set Jacksonville's sack record in the first game that he ever played with him. So I thought Mike Daniels was going to have a huge game. Obviously, him not being in there, that changed a lot. But if you're looking at this Packers defense, I mean, they could still get after it. I mean, penetration is still going to be a bonus for this team. It's just the back end is still going to struggle as long as, you know, Dom Capers is hanging these guys out. Honestly, the thing that worried me the most is I think it was it was either the first or second drive, whatever the first scoring drive was. Dom Capers stayed in that I forget what they're calling it, the nitro defense, where it's like basically a dime defense. And the Atlanta Falcons were in 21 personnel. So they were had a fullback and a tight end, and Green Bay just stuck out there with their dime. They had six defensive backs out there. I think it was under center, too. You know, Green Bay has been known to do that. I mean, you could go back to the Dallas game in the playoffs. Dallas will go out with one receiver, you know, as many extra offensive linemen as they had receivers, and Green Bay would stay in nickel. You can go back to the Seattle game. The Seattle game, basically, whenever Seattle was on the 40-yard line or closer to getting a safety, right, that end zone, on first and 10 and second and 10 or more, Green Bay basically half the time used Morgan Burnett as a standing nose tackle over their center. Mm-hmm. And they basically played that dime defense the entire time, even when Seattle brought in an extra offensive lineman. So like Green Bay is just going to play light ball all game, no matter what situation you're in. You know, if you're backed up against your own end zone and it's first and 10, or if you're 1 yard out on the goal line, like they're pretty set on like they're riding out this dime defense.
Well, that brings up two things for me. One is I was watching the game film today, and the first thing I noticed is that after Mike Daniels went down, almost all of the Falcons' runs were to the right side, and I think that Mike Daniels would have actually made a pretty big difference in that as the game went on. Every run that was over 3 or 4 yards went to the was either off right guard or off right tackle. And then the other thing is that there were a few times where I was wishing that Josh Jones was in the nickelbacker and that Barnett was playing safety. And I don't know if you think that would change the look of that defense a little, because Morgan Burnett is still like pretty undersized to be doing that, I think. I don't know what your takeaway on that is, but I didn't see as much to be worried about as I thought I did when I was watching the game live. Like when I rewatched it, it didn't seem so bad to me, but maybe I'm totally off base.
Yeah, I just kind of – I mean, you brought up, you know, Burnett being a smaller type of guy, and I know a lot of people are like, no, you don't understand. Like, it's not actually dime. You know, he's playing linebacker. But the fact of the matter is he still has a safety's body.
Yeah, he bounces off like a safety.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to – because I was going to try to make a couple cut-ups because I was charting the game, the week one game against against Seattle, and I got all I highlighted all those reps where he was standing over the center. I was like, oh, I'm going to highlight some stuff and try to make fun of Seattle fans, because it's fun to make fun of Seattle fans and see, you know, the safety lined up over your center 12 times and he bodied your center X amount of times. And I went through looking at him like, I don't think Burnett made a single play like on those 12 reps where he was standing over the center. I mean, it's kind of a wash. It's kind of a quick read thing where it's just basically, okay, I have to go inside of Burnett. Like Burnett beat the center to the spot, but he's not going to do anything more than that. And it's just basically that's what they were trying to do against Seattle. They did not do that, it seemed, at all against Atlanta. That kind of surprised me. Just kind of goes to show how much, you know, week to week game plans change. I do think Joe, that would be interesting to see him play that low. I guess that just depends on what your thoughts are on, you know, the other defensive backs, like who are you taking off the field type situation. I will say Kevin King got beat a little bit early, and then, you know, the first quarter was bad in terms of trying to stop Julio Jones, and then after that I feel like the team held up pretty good. I think they allowed like 80-90 something yards to Julio Jones in the first quarter, and then I can't really remember him making more than one other big play outside of that.
He was at 94 until the fourth quarter, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
and once we had a friend at the bar
95 and a half, and he was a yard short, and we were like, they're just gonna run it the rest of the game.
And this guy at the bar was just losing his shit over it. And then once they put Kevin King on him, I know there were two big pass breakups that Kevin King had and then I'm pretty sure that when he was still on him, when it wasn't like a zone where he started on him and somebody else ended up on him, I think he was 0 for 4, Julio was, when he was being targeted by Matt Ryan after they made the switch to put Kevin King on him. So that was another thing that I liked a lot in that game, was like I saw a lot out of Kevin King that I really liked.
Well, the thing about the way Green Bay's been using Kevin King is they've been playing him off, which is good for him. I mean, honestly, like he ball in the air, Kevin King's probably the best defensive back. Probably not the best defensive back. I like Malik Hooker and I like Marshawn Lattimore, the two kids at Ohio State. But he was top three in the class this past draft. But like before that ball was thrown, I mean, when they were using him down low at University of Washington, I mean, he's a borderline punt gunner. Like you have to basically like he can turn and run. and he could track the ball, and you just want no parts of him in press. And it looked like they were trying to keep him off of that. I will say, though, Devon House on whatever that long run was down the right sideline, I want to say, Devon House, that was totally his fault. Like that, he got beat up. He ended up a gap over where he should have been, and then like Clay was bending around the corner and made this wide ass gap, and that was the reason. I think it was Freeman who ran for like 15 yards more or something like that.
Yeah, I think Devon House actually had a pretty quietly terrible game. There was another play where one of the first big passing chunks that the Falcons got, and I can't remember if it was to Sanu or to Jones. Devon House started at the line, switched into a zone. Morgan Burnett took over whoever the right side receiver was, and neither of them had him, and Devon House was just standing out there in the middle of nowhere. And I don't know if that was a coverage call or what, but it was just a really bad look.
Yeah, and it's hard to tell sometimes with these caper defenses, because it's a lot of floating zone to pattern matching stuff. So like half the time you'll be breaking down these guys and you're like, all right, half of the field is playing man and the other half of the field is playing cover three, and I have no idea what's going on. And it's just like, that's how that zone defense is dictated. And it's like, if he breaks inside, then it turns into man coverage and you just have to take him because we have no inside linebackers dropping into coverage.
Yeah.
All right, going over to the offensive side of the ball for a little bit. Am I misquoting you when you said earlier, I thought I caught you saying this, but it might have just been like, did you not like what you saw in the first series from them, you said? Or was that the only thing that you liked from the Packers was the first series?
Well, no. The first series is fine. I just mean like the first two games, they kind of worry me. I mean, if you're looking at their efficiency numbers, they're below average at everything other than completion percentage, basically. Like yards per pass, they're below average. Sack percentage, interception percentage, run percentage, tackle for loss percentage. What they do as running backs beyond the line of scrimmage, like once they hit the line of scrimmage, they're below average. They basically abandon the run game. There's just a lot of things going on, and I'm sure it's going to work itself out. And I'm sure Bennett's not going to have as poor of a game as he had. Cobb isn't going to get hurt. Nelson isn't going to get hurt.
Like, has Bennett had these issues forever, or is this just like a new thing?
Well, that was a lot of drops. He got 11 targets.
It was a lot. I don't think he's ever been that bad, even when he had his down year in Chicago and places like that. I mean, Michael Bennett's probably in the past 3-4 years, he's probably a top 20 red zone guy anyway. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know, like that's something where I'm like, all right, that one was unlucky. You know what I mean? Like that one's not always going to be that type of situation. But I mean, being down to your fourth and fifth offensive tackle, I mean, I assume the right tackle, whose name I didn't know,
McCray.
I assumed you guys pulled.
I
assumed he
was
pulled
starting
off of a high school team.
Yeah, I know.
He was doing fine until Chris Collinsworth like pointed him out.
Yeah,
and
then
immediately
he had
a false start on a 3rd-and-1, which then resulted in a punt. And then 10 minutes later, his the sack fumble, whatever, the sack fumble fake pass nonsense. That was totally, if you watch that again, his cut block is so bad.
Yeah, that's a problem. I mean, put it this way, he is their backup center and guard, and he was playing tackle.
I feel really bad for him, actually. But on the flip side of that,
he volunteered.
On the flip side of that, Kyle Murphy switched from right tackle to left tackle and played both games against top-notch defensive front sevens and has acquitted himself pretty well.
Yeah, I agree. Here's one thing that pisses me off about McCarthy. Like, I feel like I tweeted this out at the beginning. Like, I know that their offense hasn't been that consistent, and most of it has been like stuff within like 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. And it's uncharacteristic when you have, you know, a savant playing quarterback. But like, they started going empty. They motioned Montgomery out of the backfield a couple of times. Like, simple shit I feel like Packers fans have been wanting forever. They did, and I feel like it's because their tackles were hurt, and they're like, well, we got to, you know, 3-step drops the whole time, get the ball out quick. And sometimes I want them to do, like, there's times that I feel like they don't do that enough. I don't know if you feel like that's fair or not, but I almost feel like it forced McCarthy to get creative. and it like leaves something to be desired that there's not always an element of creativity. It's like the first time he figured out like, oh shit, I should probably use Ty Montgomery in different ways.
Or I
don't want to throw down
motion Randall Cobb before, yeah, like all that stuff.
Yeah, like where is that all the time?
Well, like you hear, who is it? Collinsworth was talking about how in the production meeting he was talking with Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy was basically like, Aaron just wants to spread guys out and just like try to attack defenses with space and stuff, like every single snap. Like we just kind of got to hold him back a little bit. And my whole thought is like, why? Like, why don't you just do that? All like, it's not like you guys have extreme like Jamal Williams. As much as people like Jamal Williams this preseason, he hasn't really done anything in this regular season that's made it seem like he needs to get the ball or anything. Ty Montgomery obviously is more of a threat as a dual pass catcher running back as he is a true running back. And when you're down that many offensive tackles, I mean, quick game, that'll save your life. I mean, that sack fumble return, whatever it was that Vic Beasley had, you guys were talking about that cut. It looked like when Aaron Rodgers turned to look at Vic Beasley, it looked like he saw a human teleport 5 inches in front of his face.
Yeah.
Like he's like legitimate like faces of death type situation going on.
I don't know. I watched all the game today in the coach's film, and I don't feel that bad about this game. I really think that there were enough mitigating circumstances with the tackles out, with Daniels out, Kentrell Bryce,
Jordy
Nelson. I actually think Jordy Nelson was the least important injury. Well, okay, Kentrell Bryce might have been less important, but the offense looked not great. But if you take out the interception tilt, and then you take out the weird fumble, that's a really close game. I mean, and you can't really play that hypothetical because the Falcons, you know, are running in the second half without that 14-point lead. They're still pressing the pedal to the metal a little more. But at the end of the day, like, those were two pretty fluky outcomes, and this was kind of like, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of, like, worst possible scenario kind of outcomes, and the Falcons are a good enough team to punish the Packers for that. I don't think most teams are, and I'm not that worried about the team after this game, but feel free to roast me.
I got to get to another McCarthy thing because you mentioned like him not, you know, sometimes not just cutting Aaron Rodgers loose. I feel like he was so mad about the penalty that it affected like his actual like football rationale, because the one time you're going to cut Rodgers loose is 2nd and 12 inside your own 5-yard line with 50 seconds to go.
Yeah.
What the like?
No, they tilted. They tilted hard, and Rodgers tilted too. They were all tilting.
That sequence at the end of the first half was just bullshit, right? Like I don't know, Justice. Do you feel like there's times that I want McCarthy to be more aggressive and give Aaron a chance, but that was not. I feel like that was, he lost his mind.
Yeah. It just seemed like aggressive for the sake of being aggressive. It was very odd.
He's mad about the call.
No, it was a total tilt for everybody on the field and for us. I was losing my shit in that bar. Like upset.
That's like a real thing too, because like if you go back and like listen to like Bill Parcells interviews and things like that and like look up the numbers for it, like there are very certain situations where like a coach will just be like, screw it, we're going for it. Like Bill Parcells after a turnover, like every single time after a turnover, he would just be like, deep ball. We're going deep ball immediately. Like, yeah. We got momentum. We're doing it just blindly. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
That's stupid. Yeah, that really is so stupid. I mean, those calls were bullshit, both of them.
That call was awful.
Yeah.
The guy who threw the flag was, like, literally 30 yards downfield with no possible ability to determine the depth. Like, the guy who threw the flag was the guy in the secondary.
Yeah.
And there was no way that he could know how far from the line that happened.
Yeah. I feel like there's a team that's won quite a few Super Bowls with a quarterback that some people think is the GOAT that has built an entire offense off of pick plays.
No, literally, I was watching the Patriots had a game yesterday where they called a pick play, and then Tom Brady literally went up to the ref and was like, yo, it was within a yard, and they picked up the flag and canceled out the penalty.
Yeah. Gee, sorry, Mr. Brady.
Yeah. I mean, not whatever. I'm not even going to get into like conspiracy bullshit, but it was just a terrible call.
Buy his cookbook.
Although I saw someone the other day say that he eats Doritos before bed every day. I don't know if that was real.
Whatever.
Randy Moss said that
fake
on
news.
ESPN on that god-awful segment they do at Rex Ryan.
How would Randy know? Randy's in Tom's bed? I don't believe it.
I don't know. That for that one season, I don't know, man. He might have been just
chemistry that good doesn't come out of nowhere, man.
You get to have that kind of season with Tom Brady. I would do a lot of things to return the favor of 20-something touchdowns, basically proving that you're the greatest receiver that's ever lived. And yes, I understand that Jerry Rice is someone that played in our era, but fuck that. Randy Moss is the best receiver I've ever seen.
Randy Moss.
You guys know Jerry Rice blocked me on Twitter, right?
He did? Why? Because were you were tweeting about that?
Were you getting it? Oh, no, I'll let you go.
It was New Year's Eve at like 10 o'clock, and I'm like, by that point, I'm smacked already, right? And like, I look at my phone, and it's like Jerry, like notifications. Jerry Rice followed you on Twitter, and my dumbass, who's like 50 drinks in at this point, just like slide into his thing, and I just say like, Randy's better, and like took a screenshot of it and put it on the timeline. And it lasted for like maybe 20 minutes, and then he was just like slapped down. Just nope, you gotta go. But hey, look, as part of the aggressively truthful. Like, I just had to go in and just let him know.
Yeah.
You know, Randy had one up on him. I'm sorry, Jerry. I'm like, Jerry Rice ran like a 4.6 and came out of Last Chance U. I'm fine. He can't keep up in today's day.
By the way, am I the only one, back to that Randy Moss segment, am I the only one who's shocked that Rex Ryan sucks on TV? Like, he's like trying to play a character. Like, just be the guy that everyone loved to see be crazy on TV.
Fuck it. Let's eat some snacks.
Why is he trying to be a broadcaster? Just be a fucking psychopath.
ESPN has like standards and things. Like that's the problem. I feel like Rex Ryan, like if you're on a couch with Rex Ryan, like just drinking beer, eating Doritos,
he might punch you in the face. But
yeah, see, but like that's part of the entertainment.
Yeah,
like that. I feel like that's better. You take the good with the bad. Like you get him on a hot mic, knowing that he can't cuss, he can't do anything on ESPN nationally televised first time. No, he's gonna have some jitters.
Yeah. Do you get that feeling about McCarthy? I know he doesn't show any personality, but I feel like a lot of people who, you know, he'll give you glimpses, like for people who really pay attention, and I feel like he must be such a fun dude to actually hang out with. Like when he gives reporters shit in the press conferences, I love it.
Yeah, like he's from like Pennsylvania, right? Like I'm sure that dude can drink. Like if Pittsburgh. You get like that's one thing that I've learned that I've learned just going down to the Senior Bowl down in Mobile, where you like you see guys in their non-football environment, I'll say that, and they're very different. I have once seen a current NFL head coach walk out of a bar, like clearly married, like might have had his ring on. Ooh. Like walk out of a bar with like two women or like one woman around each one of his arms. Like when those guys get a couple of drinks in them and they get open and they turn into butterflies. Like who they are.
That reminds me of my Pee Wee hockey coaches. Like whenever we had a tournament, it was like game on. It was like over.
Wow. Isn't that funny to think about? These are the guys who like are sitting there fucking spitting out cliches about character and this,
shaping
the
minds of young men.
Yeah, God forbid a guy smokes a little weed to ease the pain of, you know, playing the most brutal sport there is, but
there's a little Hugh Freeze in everyone.
Nice. I don't want to forget to talk about this before we like start drifting really far away from the game. But I had thought that Kyle Fackrell would never surprise me again with a rep as bad as his rep against the Washington football team last year when he ran onto the field late and then got thrown off the field quickly thereafter. But getting outrun by Matt Ryan, first off, how is he so old? Second off, how does that happen? Like, someone explain to me why this guy, what Ted Thompson saw in drafting Kyler Fackrell.
I don't know, and I want to reiterate again. I went to the Senior Bowl 2 years ago when he was there, and he said – because he was a high school safety, right? He was a high school safety converted to the line when he got there at Utah State before – I think it was before his mission and his injuries. And he said that he would rather drop back into coverage than go after the quarterback, and that freaked the hell out of me. And I was like, no, there's no way. You take someone with that level of athleticism with that injury pass and all sorts of stuff. Like the fact that he even went as high as he did was kind of surprising just to like the draft community in general. And then to have it happen to Green Bay just made me super sad. But yeah, a little stilt runner running like, man, that dude would have come in third place to a pregnant woman, man. That was not good. That was not good.
Third place like, to a pregnant woman.
Do you have any takes on, maybe this is a totally stupid question because I know I haven't seen him play basically at all, but do you think Montrevious Adams, when he comes, if he comes back, is like going to bring something to this defense?
No. I think Montrevious Adams is probably one of the more overrated prospects too. Yeah, that's the sad thing is those are like the two guys that I didn't really ride for. Montrevious Adams was kind of a weird guy because the thing about you go down to the Senior Bowl too and you like know like to be able to see the defensive linemen, you have to kind of like float with them and they move like corner to corner. So like you're in like a pack of like scouts and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. you kind of know who is following these guys.
Yeah.
And like Montrevious Adams was one of those guys where like me, Charles McDonald, there's a couple other people from like Draft Twitter or whatever that are like following like this pack of like scouts to go see like defensive linemen wherever, whatever corner of the end zone they're working out in. And Montrevious Adams, like Charles and I are just like, man, this dude's getting his ass kicked every single day. And then like we'd get back to the hotel and we'd see 15 tweets and like a, you know, a half dozen articles written about Montrevious Adams. And it's like, yeah, he had a great, you know, this dude had a great practice, all sorts of stuff. And then you go see where he is on people's big boards and you're like, oh, he's a second round pick. So like a lot of people, like people don't really realize how much of like the Senior Bowl analysis stuff is like just frankly just made up, or like you'll catch two snaps of a guy mm-hmm. if you're not really paying attention to a unit. Montrevious Adams is a guy who kind of rose at the Senior Bowl, and I have no idea why the hell he did that. Quentin Dial saw it though. Like Quentin Dial, legitimate run defender. Green Bay's low on D-line bodies, but like I said, I mean, this team is fine with playing dime. So basically you should never expect more than two of these guys to be on the field at the same time. So if Daniels comes back soon, you know, they should be fine there.
Who both of these guys are kind of getting a lot of crap from Packers fans now, I guess rightfully so. But who do you think has been worse, Demarius Randle or Quentin Rollins? Or do you have faith in either?
I go with Randle.
I have faith in Randle, actually. Like, okay. In terms of expectations right now, he's probably – I mean, just because he was drafted higher, right?
And he has a better physical profile too, right? Like
That's the thing is like – oh, damn. I could find this tweet real quick. Basically, like every cornerback who has his athletic profile and has been drafted in the first round in the past like decade, I want to say has been a Pro Bowler, and like the second round pick guys, right? Because like second round picks, he's close enough to a second round pick that he should be included in the second round picks. It's like Jamar Taylor, the kid who kind of like bounced back in Cleveland, Miami type guy, and then who is the other guy? The guy that got traded from Philadelphia to New England that had a good end of the season. I can't remember his name.
This is recently.
Yeah, it was last year. I can't remember. He was like their big corner. I'm gonna look it up.
I can't remember either.
It's a race.
Horrible.
Eric Rowe.
Eric Rowe. Yep. So like that's kind of his low end right now, and those guys are still like, those guys can erase certain type of receivers. I think Demarius Randle will get there. The problem is, man, like you got to remember, Demarius Randle hadn't played cornerback since he was playing junior college.
Yeah.
I want to say, and that's when he was playing baseball and football at the same time. So he was a guy who needed like a full 2 years to get developed. He was a big, you know, he was kind of like Kevin King in some ways, where he was a big time project, but at least Kevin King got to play cornerback. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Demarius Randle was playing like, he was playing like boundary safety, which yeah. in the Pac-12 basically means you're not playing at all. You just run fast.
yeah.
Just keep people underneath you. And then that injury hurt him. His development, I think, a bunch, because like Dom Capers, I mean, all the Tennessee, Pittsburgh, Green Bay, like that whole tree, it's like you need reps there more than anywhere else, which is why Pittsburgh went so long without drafting a cornerback, because veterans there matter more than athleticism. You have to like a lot of front end investment.
It's weird too, because like, I guess, you know, one thing I feel like we often praise them for is the faith in Joe Witt being like a really good cornerbacks coach, and they almost by design take guys who haven't played corner, but then they play right away, and that's problematic. Like Sam Shields was thrusted into action right away as a, you know, undrafted free agent, but Tremont Williams was still in that team and, you know, usually covering the best receiver in their entire Super Bowl run. Like it's easy to ease guys in from Louisiana Tech, like Tremont Williams undrafted, when you had Al Harris and Charles Woodson, you know, those guys in there now. Now it's like, okay, an inexperienced guy, very little experience, you know, Demarius Randle, safety.
Here, cover Quentin Rollins,
point guard.
Yeah.
You guys are going to start for us, and you're going to play all these reps in a super complicated scheme.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, there was it was after, what year was their defense? Just like was it 2011 maybe? Or was it after the 2012 loss to the Niners? After one of those,
what was
somebody
that?
Said
what
it.
Was
I think
that?
It was Tremont Williams
the
who
MD
said
Jennings.
It.
Yeah, Tremont had it. He went on
Tremont
the record
said,
and was like, look,
dude,
the fact that we're the youngest team in the league every year
and
is
playing
like a big
this
part
defense
of this. Yeah, yeah.
is a problem.
Yeah.
And that's still the case. And now we're talking about having two young guys play more, Josh Jones and Kevin King. Like, that's a little bit concerning. Like, I want to see them, but at the same time, that That makes me pretty nervous.
When I spoke before, I don't mean that I don't have faith in Demaryius. First off, I need an Arias. It's like a big part of my life. And second off, like I think his physical profile is there. I think he's still playing kind of in his head, and that ends up like he still kind of seems like he's in that no man's land where he's like, I don't know if I should press. I don't know if I should hold off of the lines of scrimmage. And it's like he's kind of not really playing his game. And yeah. I don't really know how to get him to start doing that.
I want to get him to stop wearing baggy sleeves. Like, look more athletic. Like Julio Jones running by you on turf. Like it's going to make everybody look slow. But when you're wearing like a baggy ass t-shirt indoors, like that looks even worse. Like, look like a, you know, have a little bit of swag at corner for Christ's sake, please.
More accessories.
Fashion police.
More accessories.
Yeah. Like, let's get some thin wristbands, right? Like some maybe black tape around the gloves and that's it. I don't need all the baggy sleeves up in there. Seriously.
Where do we go from there?
So judgy. So judgy.
Serious,
like, Sam Bradford threw for a million yards a couple of weeks ago, but like when you're wearing a baggy jersey and you look like, you know, like on the Lebertard show, they talk about how he looks like a kid wearing a Halloween costume of a football player. Like, I don't know. That's the kind of stuff I think about when I see him just getting roasted by Julio Jones.
Well, I feel like Keenan Allen used to do that. I can't remember if he still does that, but Keenan Allen for sure went baggy sleeves, like full on pro club white sleeves for like a full season.
Yeah,
but
in San Diego remember, too.
But the thing is, you got to remember, he also wore a Raiders hat after being drafted by the Chargers to give a big old middle finger to the Chargers. So like that kind of balances itself out.
Yeah, Keenan Allen also has a lovely beard.
There's a guy, by the way, I saw this on Saturday on the Badgers now, who wears the hoodie. James Jones kind of started the trend. I saw. Their punt returner. I don't remember his name. I don't
Who's
know the
punt returner.
Well. The Wisconsin Badgers.
Oh.
I saw that. what were some of the other things I wanted to get to off of this? Oh, no. This is something that's not necessarily specific to this game. We referenced it on our show a couple of weeks ago. The Le'Veon Bell Ty Montgomery take.
Oh, yeah.
I asked if that was sarcastic because I didn't listen. If you talked about it on the show, I didn't listen to it. I only like read it in print. What's the deal with that?
I mean, okay, so let's talk about it.
I'm actually kind of with you on this.
All right, so a lot of this Le'Veon Bell stuff comes from me being a former offensive lineman, someone who's coached offensive line, played basically since like, what is this, like a dozen years now? Basically, like the majority of my life has been based around offensive line players, something like that. Le'Veon Bell, like a lot of the stuff where people are like, man, he's so patient. I'm looking at him like, man, his offensive line is so good. Yeah. Like that's a big thing. One of the things that I've done with the update, which we do for Setting the Edge, is you split up basically because I don't think people understand how much tackles for losses influences yards per carry. Mm-hmm. So we can use yards per carry as an evaluation tool for running backs. But what we have to do is we have to X out tackles for losses and kind of discount or just account for offensive line play in this situation, right? Well, when you look at the Steelers running game, Le'Veon Bell, at best, he's a league average running back, which is totally fine. I mean, people don't really complain about league average running backs or anything like that. So it's fine. It's just he's not a top five guy when he has the ball in his hand. It's just his offensive line is so much better than everyone else. And then coming into this year, that's one thing that I was saying. Right now he's averaging, 3.2 yards per carry? So let me check right now to see where the Steelers stand in this. I know that for yards per target, he has 1.9 yards per target right now. So even if you're going to talk about him as a pass catcher, he's not doing that great. So right now, beyond the line of scrimmage, the Pittsburgh Steelers are 28th in the league in terms of their running game. So that's when Bell can get the ball past the line of scrimmage. When you go back and watch D'Angelo Williams – In 2015, he was a better running back than Le'Veon Bell behind that same offensive line. Stats will back that up too.
Last year, Le'Veon Bell's
cool, man. He's just super he's a very flexible person he's a jack of all trades, master of none, but we got to start saying that he's a master of none.
Yeah. Well, and the flip side of that is that Ty Montgomery is actually really good. And I feel like a lot of this is coming out of your kind of like ongoing hilarious beef with 14 Team Mocker about that, but maybe I'm misreading that.
Yeah, he's got to take it. No, because we put up these numbers, and I was like, yo, Ty Montgomery's wild, underrated, like da-da-da-da-da. And then he was saying, like, what if you try to do this for, like, receivers? Like, this would never work. And I did it for, like, receivers, and it was basically, like, the top receivers that you would assume were ranked in the same way And then it was like Adam Thielen was like fourth. And he was like, that's a freaking joke. And now you look at receivers now, and if you run the same numbers for this season so far, he'd be the second best receiver in the NFL.
Thielen
so
would?
Like these numbers like actually, yeah, yeah, these numbers actually translate from year to year. If you look at, you know, targets per reception, or if you're looking at running backs at what they're able to do beyond the line of scrimmage. So like those are, things are things that translate year to year. What changes is quarterback play and what changes is offensive line play.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I'm with you. I think Ty Montgomery should be considered among the best running backs in the NFL right now. And I think most of the time, broadcast teams are busy talking about he's not even a real running back. And I think that's total bullshit.
He's only a good running back because teams can't figure out if he's running. It's that number, man. It just messes with.
He
their
should
breath.
Just change his number so that the commentators will fucking talk about the fact that he's good instead of the fact that he wears number 88.
No, keep
that
number stays.
Oh. Keep it. It's working. The funniest thing to me is that these guys are like, man, how are they going to be able to tell if a running back is running back if he's not wearing the number 20? Like, these guys haven't come from college football.
What's this guy doing in the backfield?
Yeah. Wait, whose take is
where
that?
Where they got number fours running at wide receiver and stuff.
Yeah.
So. Andy Benoit, isn't that his take? Or whose take is that? Someone is
It could be a lot of people's takes. But
someone
yeah, Benoit,
is dying on
Benoit.
That hill.
Benoit said in the preseason that the way he would stop like Odell Beckham was by telling his cornerback to like physically assault him. Yeah, that guy.
There's an easy way to stop Odell Beckham. It's called Eric Flowers. Jesus Christ, dude. I don't know if I was more amazed at how like Mike Daniels didn't lose a single rep against the Seahawks, or Eric Flowers not winning a single rep, or Ben McAdoo. Just making no adjustments whatsoever and just coming out in the second half of the Monday night game and being like, you know what? I'm not going to give him any help. I'm just going to keep expecting a different result.
I think the Giants are kind of bad.
The Giants are really bad.
Hot take coming through.
I'm just happy that McAdoo's getting
exposed.
It's
a weird year, though. A lot of teams look kind of bad.
Yeah.
Like, nobody looks very good, I would say. I mean, Atlanta looked good.
McAdoo.
But then they got, you know, they almost choked against the Bears. So
tired of people getting jobs because Aaron Rodgers' is greatness. There was... Seriously, like coaching him, give me a break. Like that's why he got the job in New York. I was saying,
well,
actually,
like Philbin,
I was.
Philbin did the same thing. You got to remember, Philbin got hired in Miami, and they asked Rodgers, like, yeah, what did head coach, you know, former Packers assistant Joe Philbin do in practice? And he was like, he like held up scout team cards.
I know. Yeah, it's like that's like what when people when you try to think about like what Edgar Bennett does, and I know people like him, and he was. By all accounts, like a really good running backs and then receivers coach, but he's an offensive coordinator who doesn't call plays. He's like a really, really high level quality control guy. Like it's McCarthy and it's Rodgers. In fact, we were talking at the bar and joking when McCarthy got super heated and turned like a color red I've never seen before. That if he were to get thrown out, does Aaron just call plays the rest of the game? And if that were the case,
God.
I was rooting for it. I was like, dude. Get his ass tossed, because I would love to just see what three quarters of Aaron Rodgers, or actually at that point, I guess it would have been like
basically
a half of football
2 minutes
of Aaron Rodgers calling his own plays the entire game.
Madden 18.
Well, like, weren't there rumors that Aaron Rodgers was calling some of those plays in that Matt Flynn Week 17 game on like New Year's Day?
Yes,
whatever
I believe
it was.
So, yeah.
Like, I mean, he broke records. That he had a backup quarterback break passing records against the starting defense in the NFL. Yeah, you gave me a new thing to root for. That's what I'm rooting for this entire season.
Please. You can. That's my campaign for the rest of the year. Just one game, get him tossed. Hopefully like a meaningless game, not, you know, a huge game towards the end of the season.
Bengals coming up.
Yeah.
Bengals coming right up.
That's perfect.
And then Mike can go call their plays and show them how to run an offense.
Well, they just changed their offensive coordinator, so they're just looking for a touchdown at this point. Not sure that McCarthy will get that to them. Anyway, all right, really, really quick. Just a couple quick Twitter questions for our guest, Justice Mosqueda, on Twitter at JUMOSQ. Is Josh Jones going to take Bryce's spot at safety or Burnett's spot at linebacker, letting Burnett go back to safety? I feel like that's kind of weird.
I think he's better suited at inside linebacker, to be honest, just based off of how he played at North Carolina State. If you watch him and watch where he played in North Carolina State, I mean, he was damn near an edge defender at some points. So I think he's more of a natural fit there with Burnett in the back end if that change has to be done.
J'Ron Elliott and Dayton Jones both waived. Lacy, a healthy scratch in week two. I don't know if he finishes the season in Seattle. Would you be interested in any of them?
Dayton maybe, if they need interior pressure. If Daniels is out for any sort of extended period of time, I think he makes a lot of sense. But this Packers team seems to be fine with rolling out, you know, Lowry, big end, Clark, nose tackle, and then Dial and Adams. You know, Ricky Jean-Francois basically got replaced as soon as Dial was ready to play, right? Mm-hmm. So I think they're kind of fine with just having those two run defending bodies there. So, you know, Mike Daniels is kind of the pressure tackle in that type of situation. So I think as long as he's healthy, no. But if he's gone for any sort of extended period of time, Dayton Jones coming back makes a lot of sense because I think he could play there if he gets the reps. The problem was they just kind of dicked him around, played him inside and outside the tackle and messed with his weight for basically 4 years.
Yeah. Is Casey Hayward, last thing, the only guy that they've like seen walk away and actually go be more as productive somewhere else?
Devon House's first season in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
He was kind of up and down, though. Yeah, but I'm trying to think of anyone. I think if there's going to be a guy like that, Micah Hyde makes a lot of sense. Like, Micah Hyde's just a good player. If you play him in a certain role, he's going to be fine. Buffalo right now, I want to say, has a top five passing defense if you look at the numbers, and they played the Jets, so you know you have to kind of take into account of that. But the Buffalo Bills are doing fine right now. I think he's going to be solid there, so I think there might be buyer's remorse.
That was after they got rid of Gilmore too, so
yeah, very weird. But that defensive line that Buffalo has is very good, and they messed up by having it play 3-4 defense for so long. Moving it back to 4-3 is very good. Like Jerry Hughes already, like, right? Jerry Hughes basically ruined the Matt Khalil experience for the Carolina Panthers already 1 week in, or 2 weeks into the season. Mm-hmm. He probably could have had 5 sacks in the first quarter. He looks like a top probably 10 defender in the league right now. And it's literally because they moved to a 4-3 defense instead of playing that 3-4 where he dropped into coverage all the time.
All right. Well, look, we appreciate the time. Tell everybody why they need to go and subscribe to your podcast and what you guys got in store there.
Oh, we got more 5-star reviews than Peter King, who had Tom Brady on his podcast. So first and foremost, you guys got to do that. 5-star review, subscribe on your girl's phone, subscribe on your mom's phone. Other than that, I mean, just follow for takes about football from millennials. That's pretty much it.
That is good branding. Yeah. So you're both ruining avocado toast, real estate, and a bunch of other
Applebee's
shit. And giving takes about football. I love it.
Exactly. It's just full team chaos at this point.
All right. Awesome. JUMOSQ, where you can find him. What's the podcast handle? Just Setting the Edge or Setting Edge?
It's at Setting Edge because we were too broke to buy the V.
Word.
Yeah.
Yep. And then you guys have a website too, right? That's your website?
Yes, sir. It's also settingedge.com because we also couldn't afford
still
the V.
Still too broke.
Millennials.
Pay by the letter. Pay by the letter, my man.
Renters, not buyers.
We got to cut some corners, man. Cut some corners. Netflix can't pay for itself, so.
All right. Thanks, man.
Always a pleasure, man.
Anytime, guys.
Big thanks to Justice for joining us. Always fun talking Packers with him. I'm sure we'll do it again soon. All right. We're 2 weeks into the APC podcast Pick'em. Got some people moving up the standings, including yours truly. Zach, what do we got?
Mateus is still in the lead. Number one, first place, Mateus, with 223 total points.
Damn.
Man. Mike Veith. I think it's Veith, right?
He's
an APC contributor, followed by Evan Tex Western. So two APCers coming in hot. And then Price is in fourth place. Alex, you're in fifth.
Alex had the highest score of the week, though.
I believe that's correct.
Big week.
It is. He tied with Mike Veith.
Shout out to Lewis, Dan, Glenn, my brother Chris, Victor in Brazil in ninth place. And everyone else, including me. Well, I'm in 20th place. Ben, where are you?
I'm right behind you.
22nd place.
We did get some post-week one entries, right?
It's true.
So technically, it's still open. If you want to get in and try to catch up, good luck to Mateus in terms of points.
If your only goal is to beat me in particular, then you can definitely sign up now and still do that.
Yeah. You still get the t-shirt if you somehow win and come back. You don't have to be playing for all 17 weeks. So join our Pick'em League. Just hit us up on Twitter at the APC Pod or theapcpodcast@gmail.com, and then we can get you squared away with everything else that you need. If you are listening to this and haven't subscribed, please do so. And please be so kind to leave a review.
We got a new review, so shout out to I forget the handle, Brewers Fan Something. Thanks for the review.
Yeah, thanks for the
review.
That
was awesome.
You heard Justice talk about it. It's important, man.
It is important.
These reviews bring you more visibility, and we're just trying to build the brand for the podcast.
Build our cursing, umming, Kyler Fackrell hating brand.
Whatever, man. There's no, like, if you're not going to take advantage of not having the FCC hovering over you with all their rules, then come on.
Spoken like a former radio guy.
If Rex Ryan wasn't on ESPN and he was on HBO and he wasn't cursing, I'd be pissed.
All right.
It's ridiculous. All right, time for us to get out. I have a feeling this Sunday is going to be a lot more fun than last for Packers fans. Enjoy Packers Bengals. I think, are we all picking the Packers?
I'm taking the Packers. I'll take them to cover.
Take them to cover?
I'm picking the Packers, and even if they only score one touchdown, they will win.
I think you're right. The Bengals' touchdown streak or touchdown drought continues, according to you. I don't entirely disagree with that, actually. New offensive coordinator, still terrible personnel. We'll see. It's been a week 3 edition of the APC pod. We'll talk next week. Back at backingduncompany.com.
Peace.